This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Welcome to the simulation. Welcome to Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris. We're not a simulation. We're real people.
We are. Well, we think we're real, but we are living in a simulation, it seems. My God, craziness happening in the world right now as we enter September. And we got a lot of crazy stuff we're watching right now. The federal takeover of Chicago. Over 50 people shot just this weekend in the past few days over the Labor Day holiday. President Trump says, get it ready for federal troops to arrive. The Chicago mayor, Brandon Johnson, says, no, that's tyrannical. We're not going to do it. We're going to go to Chicago in just moments.
We're also going to look at American banks in crisis, something that Peter St. Ange continues to warn about, insolvency. It's real. It will affect all of us and its attacks on the middle class, if not everyone else. Also, President Trump waking up to the fact that Operation Warp Speed, the COVID vaccine rush out project, was not awesome. That there are lies and hidden truths there. And he's saying he wants an investigation. It was a very strange declaration, but at least it's like, yeah, way to catch up. That's not awesome. It was not awesome.
And also President Trump hinting at the idea of bringing insane asylums back. You know, this is obviously something that started in the 1960s, rolled out in the 1970s, really put into place by Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. You know, basically pulling people out of insane asylums and they ended up on the streets. Insane homeless camps, many people insane on the streets of America. President Trump floating this idea. So we're going to have a deep dive discussion about that and so much more on today's show. Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, we didn't have a newsletter today. We were traveling. It was a little crazy getting back post Labor Day. So we apologize for that. But we will have a newsletter tomorrow for you. So let us know where you're joining us from around the world. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at American Financing.
Oh, Clayton's. Okay, I will do that. If you've been living on credit cards just to cover groceries, bills, gas, then you know interest rates are brutal. We've been paying 20% or more to the banks. But why do that when you can call our friends at American Financing? They have mortgage rates in the fives, and they're showing people every day how to keep more of your hard-earned money in your pocket out of the hands of credit card companies. And this is something that wealthy people do all the time as they leverage their assets. They don't hoard money. They use their money. You can do this too, and instead of digging into the red, you can build yourself into the green. American Financing is helping homeowners save an average of $800 a month by using their home equity to wipe out high interest debt. No upfront fees, no obligations. It's just a 10-minute call, and their salary-based mortgage consultants will help you. If you start today, you could delay two mortgage payments, giving yourself a real breather, putting more cash in your hands. So don't wait. Call American Financing right now at 866-890-8434 or visit AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. One more time, that's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
Well, Chicago is collapsing under the weight of nonstop violence. Sources in Chicago have been telling Redacted over the past few months that Chicago PD have been told to stand down many times. Not as like a blanket policy, but in a number of different situations. Yes, told by the mayor's office to stand down when responding to violent crime. As we reported last year here on the show, Chicago PD were told to stand down when Venezuelan gangs had taken over a hotel complex. No, you don't need to respond. That's coming right from Chicago PD. Stand down. Okay. So it's not surprising then that this past week alone, the city saw a grim series of homicides, at least 13 murders, a deadly spike over the Labor Day weekend. We're talking about multiple shootings, a man found dead in Lake Michigan, entire neighborhoods living in fear. Here's just one example. I mean, this is just one I pulled out of a hat. I could have pulled any examples out. Late yesterday morning, around 11 a.m., a 48-year-old man was standing outside the 2600 block of St. Collins Street, or South Collins Street in the Little Village area, was approached by just a random unknown person, just shot multiple times, didn't even know him, died at the hospital. A According to the Chicago Police Department, 58 people were shot over the holiday weekend, and I have it on good authority that these numbers are way higher than we're being told about. Watch.
It's just gone from bad to worse to disaster.
No one really feels safe. It's impossible to feel safe in a city like this, especially with the leadership we have.
These kids are carrying guns like around the ages of 8 years old, and they're killing other 8-year-old kids with guns. It's insane.
Can you imagine? Now President Trump is threatening to send in federal troops to do to Chicago what he did in Washington, D.C., where crime has plummeted there. Combined violent crime has dropped 49% in statistics that we have from about 6 days ago. 6 days ago, so it probably has gotten better in these 6 days since we have those data in the past few days, in the past few weeks. So it's only been a few weeks since President Trump did this, you know. And I love liberal newspapers are like, Trump hasn't reduced crime 100% in D.C. Oh, 100% in a few weeks in one of the most violent cities in the United States. Okay, but 49%, nearly 50% is a pretty damn good drop,
well,
I would say.
49% better than they were able to do themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So combined violent crime, 49%. Even D.C.'s liberal mayor admits that crime has dropped, hasn't been eliminated. No, but a 50% drop is pretty damn good. But Chicago's mayor wants to score political points, of course, instead of putting the safety of the citizenry first, telling his citizens and city to rise up against Trump sending federal troops. Watch.
Are you prepared to defend this land that was built by slaves, a land that was built by indigenous people, a land that is built by workers? Are you prepared to defend this land?
Okay, sure. So honestly, by the way, I mean, so he gives a city about how the...
What does race have to do with it?
Because he's a racist retard. That's what race has to do with it. Brandon Johnson is a racist retard. That's his whole thing. He just plays race politics all the time. It doesn't matter. Without any facts, by the way. Honestly, who the hell cares?
White people also built Chicago. So did the Italians. So, I mean, what are we doing here? What does that have to do with anything? You're just baiting people based on their tribal loyalism. That's really divisive. You're right. It's racist and awful.
As Jeffrey Mead points out, it's all about fake virtue signaling. Who the hell cares about something from 150 years ago? The idea that it was built on the backs of slavery? Really? Listen to Jeffrey Mead actually break it down.
This land that was built by slaves, a land that was built by indigenous people.
You know, he has to get the inaccurate virtue signaling out to his base because it's about virtue signaling and opposing Donald Trump. That is what the modern Democratic Party is about. Now, he said slaves built Chicago. Incorrect. Illinois joined the Union as a free state. Slavery was not permitted in Chicago when it came into existence. The vast majority of Chicago's early construction and expansion was done by immigrant labor, and the immigrants were primarily white. Irish, German, Polish, Scandinavian. But again, the truth doesn't matter when we need to virtue signal and oppose Donald Trump.
Exactly. By the way, 90% of all murders happening in Chicago are to blacks and Hispanics. 90%. So who were the people that showed up to that Brandon Johnson speech, by the way? Bunch of liberal white people, according to The Blaze.
Who are safe in their neighborhoods where 16 Candles was filmed.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's like a, what's his name? The director?
It's a John Hughes film.
Yeah, it's like a John
Everything
Hughes film.
Everything was in the Chicago
it's
suburbs.
It's like in Northfield, exactly.
Right, where
New
everything
Trier
was
High School.
Safe. Sure.
Christian Maxwell, mother of four, 2026 Republican candidate for Illinois, first congressional district, says the only people who are opposed to these federal troops coming to save the city are yuppie white women who live in Lincoln Park, Northfield, Glencoe, who are safely tucked away in their liberal enclaves. Watch.
It's the yuppie white women in Chicago who want to scream about Trump being fascist, yet they keep themselves carefully, safely tucked away in Lincoln Park. Come to Woodlawn. And not the Q part. No, go past 63rd. Come to Auburn Gresham. Chatham. Englewood. Get on your scooter there. And do it about 7 o'clock. Okay. If you're not gonna do that, mind your business.
Well, they will with their weighted vests and walk around, and then they'll walk right back.
So yuppie white women, just like this woman wearing $500 Apple AirPods Max in her high-rise condo overlooking the river, telling people how great it is that she doesn't see pickpocketing happen. Watch.
And you know what doesn't happen in Chicago? People aren't getting pickpocketed left and right. Like, tourists aren't being assaulted. They're not... Tourists aren't being stabbed and shot. It's the fountain. They just missed it. I love when they go under it and all the people scream. Me, I love when they scream. Like, look how cute.
Expensive boat rides right down the middle of Chicago from my high-rise apartment in my... I love that you couldn't take off your $500 Apple AirPods Max, like, to do this little video. So why bother pickpocketing people when you can just shoot them in the head and take their wallet? I don't see pickpocketing happen here in Chicago. Chris Batty is a retired lieutenant from the NYPD. He is a big-time former detective who took down one of the biggest gang... has on record one of the biggest gang takedowns in New York City history. And he joins us now. Chris, great to have you here on the show. Welcome.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You know, I'm just... Help us make sense of all of this. The mayor makes it sound like he's got it totally under control. Like, this is tyrannical. But, you know, when you were at the NYPD and crime was out of control, how helpful would it have been to have some sort of federal response to the violent crime in that city?
You can't make sense of it because it common sense isn't common, and they have no common sense. You have that many shootings and you're asking, you're getting help from somewhere else and you want no part of it. Why? So in New York City, as you could see, look, Trump said the same thing. If you guys don't get a handle on it, we're going to send the National Guard in. What did the mayor do? He sent out more cops to patrol. And if you look at the difference between New York City this weekend, who has, I think, about 6 million more people in their city, they had 6 shootings as opposed to 58 in Chicago. Why? Because New York City residents like law enforcement. When I worked in the Bronx, there was never, if there was shootings, 58 shootings in a weekend, the residents would be storming the precincts asking for help, not going to a rally. But then again, it's not the residents going to the rally. Like that lady said on her TikTok, it's liberal women that live far away that's complaining and saying, hey, we can't have Trump send in his stormtroopers and whatnot. I mean, it's nonsense. But like I said, common sense isn't common.
But let's talk about who is victimized here, because it is not the people who show up to these rallies. So think of the tone-deaf nature of protesting that this is fine for other people. So what do we make of those voices that are so privileged and powerful?
It's like the saying, no atheist in a foxhole. That person that's at that rally is walking down a bad neighborhood in Chicago. I bet she's going to want to see the National Guard there at 2 o'clock in the morning. The problem is most of the crime that's happening in not just Chicago, New York City, or the violent crime across major cities in the country, it's all young adults doing it. The stats in Chicago show that the crimes are done mostly by blacks and young blacks. 90% of the homicide victims are black.
Is that racist
to
say?
It just doesn't make sense.
I saw someone in our chat room saying, I'm unsubscribing from your channel because of your racist tone, to call out the fact that these are the statistics. So it's racist, I guess, to admit the truth, right?
Okay. I mean, this isn't a problem in 2025, right, under Trump. The same thing happened under Biden, under Obama. If a black person commits a crime in a newspaper, it states that they don't give a description of the offender. If a white person kills somebody, you're going to get male, white, 28 years old in part of the description. It's just how society is. Everybody's this woke society is like, you can't just be truthful. It's not
but
racist.
The inverse
it's racism.
Is true. The studies show that the inverse is true about the victim. If the victim is white, it will get reported in the news. If the victim is black, it will not. And the racism there is we expect black people to be killed by black people, so it is not news. And so the racism is built into our biases here. It is not racist to, it's racist to say it's fine. It should not be fine for one population to be the victim of crime.
No, it isn't fine, but it's not racist. I mean, if a black person kills a black person, the black person killed the black person. If a black person kills a white person, if a white person kills an Asian, it doesn't matter. Crime is crime. There is no race around it. By saying that, you know, 58 people were shot and the perpetrators were shot that did the shooting were black, that's just truth. It's not racism. If 58 right. white people shot 58 black people, it would be reported. It's just truthful. Realism is...
What about the reporting that we've had here on the show? And, we've heard from sources in Chicago over the past year, sources on the ground who were very close to the Chicago PD, that they've been told repeatedly to stand down as Venezuelans have taken over hotels, other violent crime areas. The Chicago PD feels like in many ways they're being hamstrung by their politicians in that city. Does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me because it's not just to Chicago. That happens across all Democratic cities. It's happened in New York City as well. Under David Dinkins years ago, before Giuliani came into office, a police officer on the corner wasn't allowed to make a drug arrest, and they were told to stand down. So if you've seen a hand-to-hand transaction in front of you, that officer wasn't allowed to go and arrest the person dealing drugs. And then that changed under Giuliani. And obviously New York City was the leader in law enforcement across major cities. And then they just went totally proactive. But other cities have the same thing. And I'll tell you what, I feel terrible for the Chicago cops because there's no cop that wants to watch crimes going on. You know, most people are inherently good. Chicago has tons of good citizens that need this help. And, you know, the mayor and the governor are playing politics with it because Donald Trump's in office and it was Donald Trump saying, hey, listen, I'm going to bring in the National Guard. They want to turn around and say that, oh, he's playing politics. No, he's not playing politics. You guys have 2,500 shootings a year. You know, and you talk about numbers like 50% isn't a lot. It's not 100%. But what if the number was 10% and the National Guard went in there and stopped 10% of the violent crimes? And instead of taking 90 guns off the street, the National Guard in D.C. took off 10 guns. There's still 10 less guns that could be used to hurt somebody. And the Democrats and this agenda that they have, the guy could cure cancer. And it's going to be an issue. Well, look how he did it. I mean, it's nothing new. This has been going on for 16 years. It's just you're playing with the lives of citizens. And I don't know, getting 13 people. I've seen reports 8 to 13 people killed over the weekend. I mean, wouldn't you want that number reduced even by one? Even by one.
It's right. just a random sense. Just a random innocent 48-year-old man just standing there on the street corner. Gets just gunned down, shot multiple times.
17-year-old girl was hitting in her house. There was a shooting outside her house. The bullet came through the window, shot her in the arm. Thankfully, it was just the arm. I mean, what was that girl doing? She was watching TV.
Yeah.
It's awful. Awful.
Now, what do you make of a judge in California has blocked the Trump administration's use of troops in California, but said that they could stay, and it only applies to California, so it doesn't mean he couldn't do it again. I don't think that, I mean, he only sent in troops to guard federal buildings. So do you think that this is a speed bump for the Trump administration, or do you think they're really going to have to contend with continued rulings from judges?
That's their playbook, right? He can't even get people. He can't even get people appointed to his cabinet. Still, how long? I mean, listen, it's California. Does anything in California make sense? But honestly, he's gonna look. I mean, they're suing him over everything, and it's just gonna continue to happen until he's gone. It's a shame because they hamstrung him and. I don't know. It's just a little disheartening to see constantly these, and it's both sides. It's not just the Democrats. You play politics, and there is no politics when it comes to violence, you know? And you just seen with the shooting that just happened recently. As soon as it happens, both sides are going to come out and play politics. And, you know, it's violence, and it shouldn't be that way. We should be looking to protect these kids that are getting killed in Chicago and all over the United States. And if that means sending in 800 National Guard troops, well, I don't see how that's a violation of anybody's civil rights. I mean, I'm not a U.S. Constitution lawyer, but I don't know. If you called me, if there was burglars and homicides going on my block and the state police wanted to put 50 cops on the corners, I'd kind of be happy about that when I come home from work.
Yeah, I'll get you out of here on this, Chris. When you saw Brandon Johnson there giving that speech and the crowd was almost overwhelmingly like white liberals who clearly don't live in that area applauding this. Was that surprising to you?
No, I've witnessed it for years in New York City. It's no different. It's, you know, nonsense. listen to me. I don't want to disparage him. I don't know him. But come on. It's a clown show. That's all it is. Yeah. You know, he's rallying the troops. And like I said earlier, not one of those people are going to be walking through that neighborhood that they're having all that violence at, you know, coming home from working wherever you work at 11 o'clock. And then you're walking down the street and you see a couple of kids hanging out on the corner. They don't have that experience because they're going home to back to their houses where their parents who make $300,000 a year are paying for their school and paying for their livelihood. They don't have the fear that so many people in the United States have when they're walking through high crime areas and, you know, they're just trying to go to work or come home from work or go get a meal with their kids or something like that. And in the case of the 17-year-old, which I wish I knew her name, sitting in front of your TV watching a show and then you're hearing, and I'm sure that's a common experience for these people.
Oh, yeah.
But no,
yeah.
I'm not. But you know who never had that experience? Those clowns that were at that rally screaming about Trump being a Nazi and all that nonsense. So
no, they wouldn't be there if they had. So race baiting is the only way to defend what is otherwise a hellhole of a situation. So and in fact, we have highlighted there was a film, a documentary that came out recently called Their Lives Mattered about victims of inner city crime, kids. 5-year-olds in Chicago. Nobody tells their story because then it forces us to admit what the violence is there and who are the perpetrators.
I'm sure people had a problem with that documentary too, saying that's racist. That's another. I never understand.
Produced by a black man, Xavier DeRusso. Well, but yes, they call him a self-hating black man.
Yeah, everything's racist. Everything's racist.
Because all lives don't matter. If you say that, that's racist.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Berry has been our guest, retired lieutenant from the NYPD, responsible for one of the largest gang takedowns in New York City history. Chris, great to see you. Thank you for your perspective on this. Great to have you here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. You bet.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk about the collapse of American banks, how they're in for a hard time. We're also going to talk about Operation Warp Speed, how President Trump says he wants answers on why it was such crap. We do too. He actually admits all the things we had to find out for ourselves, and he wants some answers. We would like that as well. Also, are insane asylums back? And are you in favor of this? Yes, there are insane people on the street, but does this lead to the pharmacratic state? Do you want the government now to have the right to declare you insane and lock you up forever? That's, we need to discuss this in a serious and rational manner.
But before we do that, you know, right now, I don't know if you know, the Fed is about to cut interest rates, and this is bubbling up right now. We're going to talk about, obviously, the banks going bust here, what these commercial loans or residential real estate loans, all of that is coming to a head here. We're going to talk about that in just a second with our next guest, because things are getting really, really troubling for the U.S. dollar. This liquidity is drying up. What is going to happen? I really think, you know, this is an important moment. If you have your family's future, like, how do you preserve your family's wealth? Do you have a few thousand dollars in U.S. savings, in U.S. dollars? I just want to impart to you the value of making sure that you protect your family's future, your family's wealth, by not having it sitting in U.S. dollars. Tangible assets. I mean, what Natalie and I do is we invest in precious metals. So if you've got $1,000 or even $500 or whatever it is, can you convert that over to silver? Can you convert that over to gold? Why is gold appreciating at its highest levels in history? Why is silver surging this weekend? If you saw a 14-year high just hit on Friday and continues to go up, why? There's a big reason why. It's because of what's about to happen to the U.S. dollar and the devaluing of our currency. And the team that we use has been with us for years, and that's the team at Lear Capital. They can help you start investing right now in precious metals. Just get on the phone with them. They're an American company, no risk at all. Just have a conversation with them and say, hey, I've got this, or I've got an old 401k, I want to convert it over. They will help you. They'll help you the whole way. They've helped our entire family do it. That's who we buy our gold and silver through. So call them today, 1-800-613-3557. Or just go to the website LearRedacted.com. Book a free phone call with these guys. They're an American company. They're not going to be outsourced to some Indian call center somewhere. Okay? They will call you back. They'll make sure that they have a great team ready in place to talk with you. And also talk to them about how you can get your free precious metals guide. They'll send it right to your house so you can talk it over with your spouse, your loved one, and think of it, you know, on how to preserve your family's wealth. For, you know, thousands of years, gold and silver has sustained while almost every government currency has collapsed, but precious metals have sustained themselves for that long. Just like real estate, gold and silver, that's what makes up the bulk of how we invest to protect our family's future. Look into it for yourselves. Protect yourselves. I'm warning you, what's about to happen in the next month is going to be very scary. So please call them, 1-800-613-3557, to get your free guide, or just go to LearRedacted.com. All right, well, speaking of what's coming and what's scary, America's banking system is teetering on the edge. The Federal Reserve has been shrinking its balance sheet at a rapid pace, pulling liquidity out of the system. Cracks are already showing. Analysts have been warning for a long time that we could see loan losses approaching 100%. In key sectors like commercial real estate and apartment complex loans. Again, we've been warning about this for over a year here on the show. Friends of the show like Gerald Celente and others have been saying this is coming. You need to pay attention. Think about that. Entire categories of loans going bust. This isn't just a few bad bets here. This is systemic. Banks across the country are sitting on trillions in exposure. While the Fed is now going to tighten its screws, central banks are buying up as much gold as they can. It's like a recipe for defaults right now. To help us break down what's actually happening here is economist Peter St. Ange. She's been following this very, very closely. Peter, welcome back to the show. You know, I can't help but think that this feels like the beginning of a 2008 style collapse, or maybe it could be worse this time. Can you walk me off the ledge, or is this what we're facing? This could be worse than 2008.
Yeah, we've sort of been in a permanent 2008 crisis, really since the beginning of fractional reserve banking. That's the purpose of central banks, is to sort of bail out the financial system. And what they learned in 2008 is that the best way to do it, you don't wait until it breaks, you bail it out ahead of time. And that's really what we saw in 2023. We saw, you know, some bank stress. We had a couple of banks that collapsed. For a minute there in early 2023, we actually had more. We had larger bank collapses than we did in the beginning of 2008. The thing is that the system kicked in, bailed out everybody, right? The Fed came in with their, you know, they essentially loaned banks based on fictitious asset values. They've got all these little backstops in there so that they can bail it out without anybody seeing it. Now, what is a concern at this point is that that system is, you know, sort of patched up with duct tape and bailing wire. And it's been holding together for the past couple of years. It got a little bit ugly in 2023, but indeed they bailed it out. They got it out of the headlines. The concern right now is that what happened during COVID is that the Fed just flooded money into the system. This is really all central banks in the world did the same thing. And you remember during Bidenflation, people were like, no, yeah, Europe's got inflation too. It's the Suez Canal, it's the supply chains. No, every bank in the world flooded out capital. Of course, that raised inflation. And so what all banks in the world did, but specifically the Federal Reserve, is they started draining that capital out. So that's something called quantitative tightening, right? Quantitative easing is when the Fed just prints money and buys everything in sight. That's kind of a Wall Street bailout. It doesn't get the headlines. QT is when they do the opposite. So they let assets roll off the Fed balance sheet. The Fed at one point had $9 trillion on its balance sheet. Is more than all the companies in all of America. So it's been letting that roll off and then canceling the dollars. Now, it did that in order to break Bidenflation, which it did. That is how you break Bidenflation. The problem at this point is that they're still about $3 trillion heavy. Okay, they have roughly $6 trillion in assets sitting on the Fed balance sheet. And they know that that's disruptive to the system. They're trying to sell that off in quantitative tightening. The issue is that that drains reserves out of the system. That drains money out, that kind of lubricates things, right? It goes for interbank loans. And so you know, to sort of give a flavor of that, there's something called reverse repo, which is where non-bank entities, including hedge funds, park money at the Fed and they get interest on it. That was a huge source of reserves of the past couple of years. At one point, it was north of $3 trillion. That is now down to $32 billion. So what's got people concerned is, A, we're draining liquidity out of the system. We actually know what happened last time. That was the so-called taper tantrum back in 2018-19, right before COVID hit. Yeah, we had some financial drama. Interest rates were spiking. The Fed had to jump in. The question at this point is, are we going to see a repeat of that? More important, the Fed does not really have models that estimate what's going to happen when you drain all of that liquidity out. So that puts the Fed, they sort of painted themselves in a corner. They have to do this QT to pull all the money out that they printed during COVID, or else that's going to continue pumping inflation. But if they pull too much out, their concern is that they're going to break something. What's most likely to break is something that a lot of us have been watching for really the past 2 years, which is commercial real estate. So there's something like between 700 billion and 1.3 trillion in commercial real estate that is in distress. It's in distress for a couple of reasons. One of them is because the Fed yanked interest rates. They made them so low, then they made them so high. That meant a lot of property, a lot of investments got made, which are only tenable at those low interest rates. And of course, those are long gone. We have high interest rates now. That means that a lot of developers, they have to take projects that could only work with 2% money. Now they have to make it work with 8% money. So that's one issue. That's the so-called cliff, the maturation wall that we're facing. The other issue, of course, is that the economics of commercial real estate changed during COVID. It changed because a lot of blue cities fell apart. You know, they had riots, BLM riots, which the police were instructed to stand down on. That raised the risk. Also work from home, so an enormous number of people left the office. Now, companies are to a certain extent reversing those work from home policies. They're telling people come back to the office or you're gone. But there are also a lot of companies that change their structure because it is cheaper if everybody can work from home for certain industries. So we've had a structural reduction in office demand. We've had a specific reduction in cities like San Francisco or New York, where a lot of companies just said, screw this. I'm done with the homeless. I'm done with the riots. I'm done with the street crime. I'm going to take things out. Maybe I'm going to take them to Florida or somewhere. And you don't have as much legacy property in places like those. A lot of those projects are brand new. So that's the concern, is that we can see a lot of those properties fail. Those commercial real estate loans are disproportionately in small community banks, which are weaker to begin with. They don't have the too big to fail permanent bailout that gives larger banks a competitive advantage in raising capital and in risk rates, which is all backed by the taxpayer, but anyway, it exists. So that's the concern, is that we can see this cascade where commercial real estate breaks, community banks break, and then when you've got that combined with this eroding capital buffer across the entire economy as the Fed drains out, we could see something that at least is as bad as 2023, could be worse, more towards 2008.
Jeez.
Now, something I've been wondering about is President Trump continues to put pressure on the Fed to lower interest rates because he wants more money to circulate. But we all know that you don't get both. You either get a low rate or a low price. And so if we get that low rate, we're going to see prices of homes skyrocket. And something that Marjorie Taylor Greene has said repeatedly is that young people can't afford to buy houses. So that's not going to solve this bit. What happens? I mean, it seems inconceivable, but could this push housing prices even higher? What would that do to the housing, the primary home market?
Yeah, they absolutely could. So you're right. Traditionally, when you lower interest rates, house prices go up. When you lower interest rates, everything goes up. This is why boomers are so rich, because the Fed handed them their $1 million retirements. But specific to housing has really been a mess the past couple of years. And again, this goes back to the Fed yo-yoing rates, right? So if you push rates to near zero and you keep them there for a little while and then you suddenly yank them up, right? The Fed increase of interest rates over the past couple of years, that was the biggest since the 1970s, right? So that is disruptive to all kinds of things. It's disruptive to community banks, to commercial real estate, but specifically to housing. Because what it does is that people in. So somebody might have bought a house in, you know, 2021. They might have bought it at 3% mortgage. It was expensive back then, but they could afford it at 3% mortgage. The problem at this point now is that home prices have gone up about 40% nationwide. But because the interest rate on mortgages went from, what was it, 3.25% to, you know, now we're roughly 7%, people are priced out of the market. And the issue is that when you lower interest rates, historically, that makes house prices go up even more. The question is, when we unstick this frozen market, right, we've got all these millions of people who are locked into homes where they can't afford to sell and get a new 7% mortgage, when that unsticks, nobody really knows exactly what's going to happen. We've seen a couple of indicators, such as the number of home sellers. There's about 500,000 more sellers than buyers. That's the biggest disconnect since the wake of the 2008 crisis, so about 2012-13. What happened back then is prices did fall. They didn't fall much. They fell by about 7 to 10%. The magnitude at this point is larger. Also, you know, remember back in 2012, we just sort of cleaned out a lot of the deadwood in the market. Not necessarily in a good way. A lot of people lost their houses. But anyway, we had sort of repriced things in the market, which we haven't done at this point. So it could be larger than that. But I think really the confusion in home prices is that if you look at the projections from, you know, Zillow and Realtor, the National Association of Realtors, nobody knows what's going to happen. People just kind of put their finger in the wind and say, I guess it'll go up 1% or 2%. Nobody has any idea because the Fed so screwed up the market with the interest rates. And now, of course, you know, Trump is a developer by instinct. He loves low rates. And, you know, if you're a property developer, of course you love low rates. It makes your projects profitable. So he's always going to be pushing for that. And, you know, we sort of, you know, of course, at this point, we have a larger question, which is Trump going after Fed independence completely. During the campaign, he criticized the Fed institution. You know, the trick is always that when you're out of power, you're going to hate organizations like the Fed because they're, you know, being controlled by Biden people. But once you're in power, it's extraordinarily tempting to go from abolishing these institutions to using it for yourself. And so it looks like at this point, that's very much what Trump wants to do. It doesn't necessarily drive inflation. And the reason goes back to that quantitative tightening, right? So if the Fed continues essentially selling assets and canceling the dollars, that could theoretically put a lid on inflation, even with low rates. But you're absolutely right. As far as housing goes, historically, house prices go down when you have this kind of excess seller market. Really, nobody knows what's going to happen at this point. And if inflation takes off again because of those rate hikes or because of those rate cuts, then absolutely, it could be even harder for young people. There was a statistic, I actually just posted it today, where 50%, let's see, in 1970, 50% of 30-year-olds had a house and they had a family, they had kids. Today, that's down to 14%. I mean, we have completely destroyed. That's 30 years old. That's not 23 years old, right? That's 30. Traditionally, that's when you were grown up. Not anymore. People cannot afford it.
With the 30 seconds we've got left, Peter, are banks already technically insolvent and we're just not being told about it? They're hiding it from us?
100%. Fractional reserve means banks are always insolvent. That's the reason why they create central banks, is to bail them out. The godfather of central banking, Walter Bagehot, said that very, very clearly. They don't even hide it internally. They don't write it in the newspaper, but yes, they're 100% insolvent. When your grandma puts her money in the bank, she thinks the money is in a vault. It is not. It is relent to hedge funds in, you know, Indonesia or something. The money ain't there. So this is a fundamental issue in central banking, is that, you know, the reason why they jawbone, the reason why they have late Sunday night, you know, conferences reassuring everybody that the banks are safe and then they collapse. The reason for that whole smoke and mirrors is because it is permanently insolvent.
Right. Economist Peter St. Ange, always an education.
In uncharted territory we are.
Yeah, unbelievable.
We are.
Peter, great to see you. Thank you so much. Follow Peter's great work. Follow him on X and follow his great show. Always great to have you here, Peter. Thank you.
Great to be on. Thanks, guys.
Unbelievable.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk about Operation Warp Speed, how President Trump wants some answers. Yeah, us too, kind of. We have been asking for that for a while. So, all right, let's get those answers. Before we do that, we want to tell you about our friends over at Masa Chips. Now, you know that chips are not the most healthy thing. You go into 7-Eleven and you're like, oh my gosh, I absolutely can get a glycemic spike from anything here. But did you know that there is a better option of tortilla chips that is made not with seed oils, but with 100% grass-fed beef tallow? So these are chips you don't have to feel guilty about.
We had them at our kids' birthday party and all the kids devoured them.
And these were, let me tell you, teenage boys. They were, my son was turning 15. So these are boys who know chips. You cannot fool them with healthy chips, and they didn't know the difference. They were super happy about them. They are, I'm going to say, hearty. They're like, it's not like a tiny little chip that's going to get in the back of your teeth. Like, each one feels like it is substantial. It's an added bonus that beef tallow makes the chips more satisfying, so you won't find yourself uncontrollably binging and then hungry afterwards, like, why did I do that? Not at all. We eat these all the time. They have a variety of flavors. There's blue corn. There's some flavored ones. Masa chips are beloved by tens of thousands of customers. They've been endorsed by industry-leading health and nutrition experts. So get the chips that you feel better about if you're going to eat chips, which I undoubtedly do. Yeah, the chips are big in our house. Chips are... Yes. Not something we're willing to not have in our lives, but we want to make the best choices when it comes to chips. So give them a try. Go to masachips.com/redacted news or just scan that QR code if you're watching on your screen. You'll get 25% off your first order. Use the code redacted news, all caps, redacted news for 25% off your first order. Again, that's masachips, M-A-S-A, masachips.com/redacted news. Give them a try. You won't be sorry that you did. And in fact, Clayton packed him in our daughter's lunch this morning. I saw that.
Yes, I did.
Because it's his week to pack lunches.
Exactly.
And she got masa chips and guacamole. I would have been super happy with that.
She loves them.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about insane asylum, shall we?
Oh, okay, sure.
Well, President Trump said that he would consider opening back up insane asylums as he aims to clean up the streets of major American cities.
Now, on the one hand, that sounds reasonable when you think about how California has absolutely abandoned its homeless population to live in the most inhumane conditions. I was reminded, as I was thinking of this, of an interview we did about 2 years ago with a homeless advocate and a mother of an addict. Her name was Jackie Berlin. You may remember this. She told us this story that has haunted me ever since. And I've thought to myself, what do we do? And as a parent, how can you hear this story and not want to do something about it? Listen.
I was with a friend. We were trying to find someone on the streets for a family member who lives out of state and was looking for them for a while. We happened to find the person. He was naked. He's very mentally ill. And he had a box of cereal and he was eating the cardboard rather than the cereal. And we called the police because we were hoping he could get some services. And they asked him, he didn't know what his name was. He thought he was God. And he wouldn't, they said that he wasn't hurting himself or hurting anyone else. So they were just going to leave him where he was at.
Okay, naked on the cold streets of San Francisco. Imagine how haunting that is as a mother. Now, on the other hand, do we want the government in charge of incarceration for mental illness with the power to put anyone in an institution with no recourse? We've discussed this here on Redacted many times, the pharmacratic state. If the government declares you insane, you lose all power to refuse treatment. This harkens back to the days of Rosemary Kennedy and her lobotomy. This idea is not just rhetoric. In July, President Trump issued an executive order aimed at addressing homelessness and public discourse. Disorder, rather, by encouraging civil commitment and institutional treatment. So where do we stand on this? This is a tricky one we should not have knee-jerk reactions to. Let's try and avoid that and have a discussion about it. Joining us today is Dr. Robert Epstein. He's the author of 15 books, a researcher at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology, and a former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
It's my pleasure.
Okay. Okay, so where do you come down on this? Because obviously we have not done well by people by leaving them naked on the streets to eat cereal cardboard boxes. But on the other hand, I am afraid of expanding government power. How should we think about this? And what are some things that we might want to think about as we contemplate?
Well, I think you summed it up beautifully just a couple of minutes ago when you said this one is tricky. It is tricky. We used to have 500,000 beds in mental institutions for people with mental disorders, and now we have about 40,000. It was actually during the Kennedy administration in the early 1960s, speaking of Rosemary Kennedy, who was instrumental in ending the mental institution frenzy, I guess you could call it, because the people in those institutions were often very, very much abused and they were not being helped very much. And the concept was, let's get them out of there. Let's get them around normal people. Let's get them outpatient care. Let's get to the root of the problems. So these are very ambitious goals, obviously. Have they been met? Not very well.
No, so I guess we did not do that by letting them.
No.
Right.
When you say this is tricky, that's, I would say, is an understatement, because the problem is who is going to make that decision that someone on the street is mentally ill and should be hauled off against his or her will to a mental institution where basically they lose all their rights, as you said yourself. Mm-hmm. And do we want a country like that in which potentially millions of people, 1% of the population in many places like Los Angeles is on the street? Do we want to give that kind of power to the government? I don't. I think we should go back to the very ambitious goals that people had years ago when they shut down these institutions, get to the root of the problem. I remember I interviewed for a show I had, I interviewed Laura Bush, President George W. Bush's wife, who was a mental health advocate. And she'd actually written a book on this subject. And, you know, she was saying, and I'm saying now, let's go back to those ambitious goals. Let's get to the root of these problems. Let's get people outpatient treatment. Let's provide places for them to where they can get off the street besides criminalizing them and sending them to jail. So in other words, let's create more housing for them. That's a way to get them off the street. It's just to create more housing for them. But what Trump is saying, I find very worrisome, because we're talking about trying to recreate, 500,000, a million or more beds. That's a multi-billion dollar project that would take years. And again, it would put homeless people into a very, very dangerous situation. But it would put all of us into a dangerous situation, because you would be empowering somebody or other, maybe the police, to make a judgment and say this person is mentally ill and haul them off and lock them up and then take away their rights.
But yeah, it's like two extremes, right? Because we don't want to see, just drive down the streets of Los Angeles, drive down Kensington Avenue in Philadelphia, where I was just in Philly yesterday. And, I just saw a guy just like standing there, like digging through, looking for like cigarette butts underneath a tree. And just, like who's going to come? Who's going to make that assessment in these cities? That's one extreme, where they just let them just live. In these liberal cities, just like let them walk the streets. Can we learn anything from the Portuguese drug model? Famously, in Portugal, of course, they decriminalized drug abuse there and got them the help that they needed, and it's been a model for the world. Is there anything to learn from the Portugal model as it relates to homelessness?
Well, it's not just Portugal. There are other countries, including England, where they provide housing for people who need housing, no matter what their condition. And so you end up with very few people on the streets. Do we do that? No, we do not do that. That's a pretty good start. So looking at other countries like Portugal or other European countries, which in figuring out what they do, maybe that's where we should start. And I think it really, I think the bottom line is it starts with having housing available for people who are on the streets so they don't have to be on the streets. I'll give you a statistic here, which is very frightening. You know, we talk about crimes committed by people who are homeless. They're mainly nonviolent crimes. They're usually arrested for things like loitering. But the rate at which homeless people are murdered, for example, in San Diego, where I am right now, is 20 times the rate at which housed people are murdered. 20 times the rate of murder of homeless people. So they're very much in danger by being on the streets, either because of mental illness. In fact, a lot of them are not mentally ill. They've just gotten out of jail and can't find a job because of their history. And so a lot of them are just ex-cons who are on the street. The first and foremost, we need to provide housing, and not in mental institutions, just very basic housing. A lot of countries consider that a right. We do not. And that's one of the main reasons we have so many people on the street.
But we're able to house illegal immigrants in America, though. That's been great in Chicago and New York City, and we spend money there.
Now, something that bothers me a lot is the expanding definition of mental illness. And it bothers me because of the social contagion element when you see the royal family telling everybody that they're not mentally, that mental health is the biggest concern. You don't feel good. You have mental health issues. Let's destigmatize it. What I see, because I've read the work of Thomas Szasz, is the government convincing us, as he warned about, that there is no difference between discomfort and disease. And what happened then is that we have a larger and larger population on mental drugs, on psychosis or drugs for mental discomfort. That worked well for insurance companies because they didn't have to pay for institutions. They could just pay for the drugs. And then it again expands the power of the government, pharmaceuticals, and doctors. Is there any way to put that horse back in the barn now that we have such a large population of people who think they have mental illness?
Well, let me surprise you here. I'm going to attack my own profession because you didn't mention the mental health profession itself. The mental health profession is one of the major forces behind this tendency to call practically anything a mental illness. This got completely out of hand a few years ago when the American Psychiatric Association released the latest version of the DSM, which is the book that's used for diagnosing mental disorders. And they added a lot more disorders to it. I think there are now more than 400 disorders. And they even added, this was very controversial, but they added grieving for the first time as a mental disorder. Why would they do that? I mean, grieving is healthy. Grieving is a positive thing. But when they do that, what that does is that increases income and traffic to therapists. And it forces insurance companies now to pay for people who are grieving and who go to a therapist. So a lot of this is about money. And unfortunately, my own profession, the mental health profession, is helping to drive this very dangerous trend of just pathologizing practically any kind of discomfort that people have, a lot of which is fairly normal, and a lot of which, like grieving, is actually very healthy.
Gosh, you mean to tell me money is at the heart of it? Unbelievable. I'm shocked. I'm shocked that gambling is going on inside this establishment.
Well, I'll tell you one more thing here quickly. Because I was editor-in-chief of Psychology Today when the latest version of the DSM came out and we wanted to review it, the American Psychiatric Association would not let me, the editor-in-chief of Psychology Today with a PhD from Harvard, they would not let me look at the advanced copy. They rushed it into print because they were on the verge of bankruptcy. They rushed this new volume into print, which is now being used in much of the world for diagnostic purposes, even though the statistical data they had was to support it was horrible. But again, they were on the verge of bankruptcy, and they make when they release that diagnostic manual, that brings in another $100 million directly to the professional organization, and then of course much more than that going to therapists and counselors and other mental health professionals.
I've even read of a disorder that was proposed by a German psychiatrist. I don't think it ever was added to the DSM, called post-traumatic embitterment disorder. If you're just bitter about something that happened to you, you have a mental disease because you're still pissed about it. That to me seems, I mean, that's what I do every day as a wife.
I was going to say, that's that's women.
That's how I roll.
Women, doctor.
Not a mental disorder.
I've always known they were nuts. Now we get to the heart.
Okay, I once wrote a piece for Psychology Today. I think it was the first piece I ever wrote for them that was called Are Shrinks Really Crazy? And it was about the mental health problems of mental health professionals. The suicide rate at that time among female therapists was about 3 times the national average. I mean, the field itself attracts people who have a history of mental illness, or at least they have it in their family. And we encourage those people to enter the profession because we think they're going to be more empathetic. So this problem is tricky. It's about as tricky as it can get. And I bottom line here, though, I want to get back to where we started, is I don't think that President Trump's suggestion that we recreate the insane asylum model, I don't think that's the solution to this problem. I think that's moving in a very dangerous direction. It's a slippery slope, which puts many, many millions of Americans in jeopardy, because, again, who's going to make that judgment? And once system takes you in, I can tell you this because I've worked in that system. Once that system gets hold of you, they don't let you go, because you're now a bed and you're bringing into some facility or other several $100,000 a year. Often that's government money, meaning it's taxpayer money paying for that bed.
Yikes.
Yeah. And who's going to foot, you know, it's like the prison industrial complex right now. Who's going to foot the bill for all of these insane asylums, right? It's going to be a big moneymaker, just like all the prison industrial complex.
Yeah.
Dr. Epstein, thank you so much. This was really fascinating, and I found it illuminating, to say the least. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. I have lots of other things I can talk to you about, so I hope I get to another invitation from you. It's very nice to meet you both. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Great to see you. I can only take so much education in one day. My brain is spinning.
Well, you know, we all feel like, okay, we need to think this through. But what if I put it to you this way? Let's just put everyone in Burning Man in an institution.
That would clean up most of America.
Then I feel very differently about it. Just do that.
All the idiots that go to Burning Man? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that would
all
be great.
I'm just making a joke, but please do let us know your sincere thoughts on this.
Dr. Pierre Corey is going to be joining us next, because I want to get to this Operation Warp Speed story. President Trump seems to be having a come to Jesus moment about something that we knew here at Redacted years ago and got banned on YouTube for calling out. Dr. Corey himself, of course, was canceled and banned for calling out a lot of these things. Why is President Trump suddenly aware that Pfizer has been lying to him, that Moderna may have been lying to him? I don't know. Something big is happening here. We're going to talk about Operation Warp Speed in a moment. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Chapter, because millions of seniors are on the wrong Medicare plan and they don't even know it. And in fact, there are Medicare brokers who were sued by the Department of Justice for claiming to be unbiased while secretly steering seniors towards the plan with the biggest kickbacks. That's why we partnered with Chapter, because they do not do that. They don't work for the government or big insurance, they work for you. They're the only advisors that compare every Medicare plan nationwide to find what's best for you. They'll even help if you're hit with the wrong medical bills. That's real advocacy, and they've saved the average senior $1,100 per year. And in fact, one of our good friends used them. They're saving thousands going forward. The best part is that it's a free service for our audience. You can review your options in under 20 minutes if you call them at 202-655-5811 or go to askchapter.org/redacted. You'll be glad you did. In fact, most of our audience says that they wish that they had called sooner. So call them. The number there is on your screen, or go to askchapter.org/redacted.
I like it's free, by the way. You free, as you said. That's good.
Did
it's,
I say that? I think it is free.
It is free. It's totally free. So, and we thank you for the four or five sponsors that we have here on Redacted. We wouldn't be able to do this show without the support of those sponsors. We're not Fox and Friends, where they have about 30 sponsors per hour. We just have a few. So thank you for your support. We're independent. We're not owned by billionaires. And we're certainly not supported by Big Pharma. They hate us. All right. Well, is President Trump finally waking up to the international COVID shot cover-up? This has been a very big problem for President Trump, as he's been, of course, he's responsible for Operation Warp Speed, the government campaign to rush out COVID vaccines without any proper trials. Now, Trump says that he wants an investigation into his own Operation Warp Speed. Great. I like humility. I like when you people can admit they're wrong. This is after years, though, of saying that Operation Warp Speed was a spectacular achievement, one of mankind's greatest achievements, like going to the moon. He said this on Truth Social.
Well, I'm not sure he's admitting he was wrong. Let's parse out what he's actually saying.
I said I'm encouraged that he might be going down that path. I'm just saying.
That's not what he's saying. So let's take a look at what he's actually saying. He's saying that Pfizer hides data from the public, which we knew to be true. And in fact, in 2021, Redacted got a strike on our channel. They shut us down for 2 weeks for reporting Pfizer's own clinical trial data that they published themselves. Let's keep this tweet up. Let's look at it for a little bit more. He's saying, Pfizer has great numbers. They show it to me, but they don't show it to other people. And it seems like they go after people inside the government, like RFK Jr., and the CDC, who try to figure out the success or failure of different drugs. Okay. We also saw in the Twitter files evidence of Pfizer's own executives, Scott Gottlieb, demanding that Twitter suppress anyone who questioned the vaccine mandates, or supported natural immunity. Now the president is also saying that Pfizer hunts anyone who questions their narratives. We already knew that was true as well. Remember, the Twitter files showed us that Gottlieb flagged this tweet by Dr. Brett Gerar, who was a pediatrician serving in the Trump administration, for saying that people who already had COVID may not need a vaccine. Now, these are things we all had to piece together ourselves here on Redacted bit by bit. So why is President Trump now calling it out? And what of his message? He seems to be giving Pfizer some benefit of the doubt that they have some kind of awesome data. We don't know. The only real trial data we've ever seen from Pfizer was the second round of vaccines that was done on 6 mice. It might have been 9 mice. It was between 6 and 9 mice. And the vaccine trials, which did not test for transmission or hospitalization. So what does he know that we don't, given that we've been following this for so long? Well, Dr. Pierre Corey joins us to discuss. He's the author of War on Ivermectin, the medicine that saved millions and could have ended the pandemic. So, Dr. Corey, thank you so much for joining us. What do you make of this idea that maybe Pfizer has awesome data that we are missing, that's being hidden from us?
You know, it doesn't really make sense on its face. I don't know what I think he's trying to communicate something, but the way he wrote it, I'm like, you, Clayton, I didn't really get it. But, you know, by saying that there's this fantastic data that they only show him and don't show the public only makes sense if they're afraid to show it to the public, because we're going to easily see how manipulated or contrived it is, right? So that's the only way that makes sense. But what's more clear to me, or my sense is more clear, is that here's my hypothesis, is that now that, you know, Bobby's in there taking a real critical look, the CDC's getting cleaned out, a lot of people who are obstructing his work is what my guess is going on, is that they have data. The data is, you know, that they're going to reveal, or their finding is telling a very different story than what we've been told for years. And I think President Trump is trying to kind of reconcile that, you know, be, you know, and trying to really come out and say that he's been lied to. You know, he was convinced by people that this is, these were great vaccines and that they were safe and effective. And he's finding out that that's not the truth. And I think he's publicly saying, like, I don't know what's going on here because it's not making sense.
That much I can sort of buy that, because during the pandemic, he was trying to say, we don't know how serious this is. It seems like it may be on par with the flu. And he was dogpiled for that by his own head of the National Health Institute. So we can't really blame him. He did seem to try to look at the real data.
Yeah, but we can't give him, I mean, look, like Kyle Serafin, let me just put up this. This former FBI whistleblower, Kyle Serafin, he said this, if we put up this tweet this morning, he said, Trump was lied to and he believed it. We were all lied to and many of us immediately saw that it was a lie. How is this a Team Trump winner here? And of course, we were banned on YouTube. You, as Dr. Corey, you were canceled, I mean, for crying out loud. I mean, they went after you. They went after Robert Malone. They went after a friend of the show, Peter McCullough. So
RFK Jr. himself.
I'm willing to concede that point. But, I mean, maybe unless he's like in some sort of insulated bubble where he was totally protected and kept, you know?
That's exactly the word that was in my head, Clayton, is that, you know, I'm not purposely trying to defend him or anything, but my sense is that there was so much groupthink and repetitiveness, and they were in a bubble, and, you know, they're being fed this stuff that it's safe and effective and it's a solution to the pandemic, and there was an urgency and emergency. And so I don't think that they were looking at things as sort of calmly and as objectively and as skeptically as we were. And so that'll lead you to wrong conclusions. And also, come on, Dr. Fauci is a documented, heavily documented liar who has been promoting the pharmaceutical industry in his role as effectively the head of NIH for 40 years. And so,
right.
I mean, that's well documented in Bobby Kennedy's book. I mean, cited up the wazoo, all of the examples. So he has a liar and then sycophants and cowards around him who are just, you know, feeding him stuff from pharma. And so if this is a way of him showing some humility that he's able to be misled. I think we all are able to be misled. I don't think that's a crime, and I don't think he should be crucified for it. But I think that's what's coming out of this, is that he's trying to communicate that he's been misled. And that means we got to take a – that means there may be another the real truth, and or I was going to say narrative, but I hate that word. But, you know, maybe we can see a true narrative coming out around these vaccines, and that will warn people all over the country on how to behave towards these vaccines, which is to run.
Right. So I brought this screenshot from my children's pediatric practice that my children's pediatric practice is doing the exact opposite. They're not running from it. They're saying, we will help you get around the new guidelines. And I cropped out any information that might impugn them. But what they're saying here is that now the FDA only approves the vaccine for kids 5 and older who are at high risk, and the rest of them should not get it. But if you want it, we will try to help you figure out who can get it if they're not eligible. Now, this wording shows me that this practice, which I'm going to leave now because I'm so pissed about this, says they're thinking about ways to give a medical product to children who don't meet the criteria. This is a glaring indication of how far they're willing to stretch things with no clinical data that this population needs this. Have you seen much of this, or is this as maddening as
shocking
it is to me?
Just, I mean, I would have the same reaction as you if I was a parent in that practice. I mean, that email betrays, I mean, a couple of things. There's no medical scientific justification to give any kid these vaccines, first of all, and especially for COVID, right? So even high-risk kids, I will tell you, the vaccines, first of all, they don't work. We know they don't work. So we could end there. But the dangers of them far exceed dangers of COVID. Let's not pretend just if you're high risk, COVID's a problem. COVID has never been any even tiny or trivial risk to kids. I mean, it's not zero, but it's near zero risk to kids in terms of seriousness. So the idea that they're still contemplating vaccines is shocking to me. And then that mention of, like, let's figure out a way. Here's how I see that email.
We can give it. What do I care about their emotions? Hope has nothing to do with medicine.
I think it's fitting that doctor is a pediatrician, because they're acting like a child who's trying to do what daddy or mommy told them to. You know, they're literally just robotically following what the CDC used to say, the new CDC they don't trust, right? So you see how they behave when they don't trust the new CDC. And when they trusted the old one, they did everything they could, and they're scrambled. They're confused. They don't know what to do, right? And so it's just bizarre that they're still relying on old guidance from clearly a corrupt exercise. And when you juxtapose Trump's admission that, hey, I might have gotten something wrong here, or I might have been lied to, and with this pediatrician who is like fervently trying to, you know, hold on and carry on that old narrative that was propagandized into our heads over years, it's saddening. I was hoping that more people would wake up, but they're also in bubbles, it sounds like. They're in absolute bubbles, those doctors.
Well, one of the things we learned from these hospitals, the amount of money that was given and basically pumped into these hospitals and these practices to administer these vaccines, these whatever you want to call them, these mRNA shots. And if doctors stood up and said that they wouldn't do it or they called foul, they were pushed out. They were fired. They were excommunicated. And so those doctors that remained at these hospitals, like, yeah, like yourself. I mean, so is it any wonder that they're carrying the water for this? Because they got so much money. I mean, they got hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you're right. But it still, they don't have to go that far. This is how I would answer your question. I think I'm going to side with Natalie's outrage because, yes, it should be unsurprising what they're doing. But just following guidance is fine. If you don't want to say anything, you just want to get along because it's in your interest to hold on to your job, fine, then just go along with what the CDC says. But here they're actually going further and they're trying to figure out a way around it. That to me is someone who is still, you know, being completely fueled and driven by propaganda. They have no critical thinking skills, nor are they examining anything in science with the amount of skepticism that's required. I agree with you, Natalie. If that was the pediatrician of my child, I would be aghast. I would not want them doctoring my child, not at all. There's someone who betrays absolutely no critical thinking. No, I don't want them in charge of any sort of even remotely complex medical decision involving my child.
Yeah, it's a practice. It's a group of, and they turned off my ability to respond. So I thought, am I going to call them and ream them about this?
Just send them this clip.
I'm just going to leave because nothing good is going to come of that. And, you know, we live in the community with these pediatricians. And so that's
awful. Well, Dr. Korda, I mean, I guess we'll get you out of here on this. These new, it seemed like last week we had this move, one big step forward. You know, after Bill Gates shows up at the White House, we have this like big move forward where it seems like we're pulling back on these, you know, mRNA shots, and we get these new, then we come out with these new guidelines almost like simultaneously for children and then elderly people. I mean, where do you come down on this for children and elderly people right now, these shots?
For COVID?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no justification at any age, safety. There's no rational person who would give a vaccine who demonstrably doesn't work and has historically unprecedented toxicity and lethality associated. I mean, there's many different ways of looking at the analyses. You could look at life insurance data. You can look at epidemiologic data. There's still the big elephant in the room, which is that massive rise in excess mortality of non-COVID deaths. And there's nobody who's given me a better explanation. I mean, global warming didn't start last year. Drug abuse epidemic didn't start, you know, in 2021. Like, I'm just trying to figure out what started in 2021 that led to all this death. And so you guys know my opinion on this. I've deeply studied on it. I've never been more shocked and terrified by the data from the first day I looked at it. The first day I looked at VAERS, I filtered for deaths. And when you do that, you can actually get a granular two-sentence of what we call a two-liner in medicine, and you'll see a resident or the, you know, occupant of the home went to CVS at 12:30, came home, laid down, said they weren't feeling cardiac arrest called at 5:30. And I was reading that over and over and over again. This is in March of 2021. And so the fact that these are things are still, the truth and reality about these things is still elusive or a mystery to so many in society, just shows you the power of propaganda and censorship.
Yeah, and you're going to see more of it as like the NFL season kicks off and the fall flu season kicks off. You're going to see Travis Kelce from the
Yep.
You know, the Kansas City Chiefs showing you on his arm how he went and got two shots, you know, the flu shot and the COVID shot. You get two in one day. John Legend, you know, I got two in one day. It's unbelievable, the marketing campaign to push this into the... Dr. Corey, thank you for fighting the good fight. We will keep on keeping on. I'm still saddened that one out of five people say they're going to get the COVID shot this fall, you know, but hey, maybe next time we talk, it'll be one out of 10. We'll keep pushing, doing what we can do. Dr. Corey, great to see you. The book is called The War on Ivermectin. Keep up the good fight, my friend. Great to see
you. Thanks, guys. Good to see you.
Great to see you.
I'm just so irritated about an email like that because they could deal with parents who ask for it. If you're an idiot and you want to give your healthy child a COVID vaccine because you haven't studied the clinical trials and you don't know the effectivity rate, that's on you. Call the doctor. But why email all of us to make it seem like we all want it and tell us how you can skirt the eligibility rules? That's so unethical in my book. I just don't understand it. Someone said, write him a letter. Clayton is very used to me starting shit with people in places that we have to live. So I'm trying not to do that for the event, for the sanity of my whole family. So probably I'm just going to silently protest. Isn't that also malpractice, though?
Well, malpractice. Well, I don't know the answer to that. But, malpractice were illegal. I mean, because, right? I mean, you're literally, you'd be violating FDA.
They're saying we will find ways to skirt the eligibility. Can we put up that email again? What they're saying is.
Let me read it for our viewers at home, because you didn't read it. And if anyone's listening to the audio version of this. Hello, families. With recent news regarding the COVID vaccine, Pfizer has only been FDA approved for kids 5 years and older who are at high risk. We are still waiting to see what the CDC recommends, which should come out in mid-September. We're working quickly to figure out how best to identify which patients are eligible under the current guidelines and what options there are for families who want the vaccine for their kids who are not eligible under the guidelines. With this being said, this is all in bold. With this being said, we're not able to offer the COVID vaccine at this year's flu clinics, but are hopeful we will be able to in future years.
What does hopeful have anything? Why do you hope for that when you don't have the data? Why?
You're hoping to kill children? What are you hoping?
What is it about that? And you're saying, the FDA says this, but we'll wait to see what the CDC says. So hopefully we're hoping for a different outcome. Why would you hope for that? Well, I don't understand it based on what data.
And they're saying it like as if they're getting like just a ton of kids in their office that have got COVID that they're concerned about. Like they're just mass numbers of kids still coming in. We got to do something. We hope that they get this fixed because we got kids dying over here of COVID.
But that's not happened. That hasn't happened. And by the way, we know that it doesn't prevent COVID. It's been an absolute failure, no matter how you slice it. It does not prevent COVID.
No, it never was. It never was tested for transmission.
But they told us.
Full stop.
They told us that it did.
Yeah.
And by the way, in YouTube's own guidelines back in the day, you couldn't say the opposite of that. And now you cannot go on here on this platform on YouTube and say that it does prevent it. You can't do that because now they've completely 180'd their terms of service after the CDC like finally admitted the truth about it.
Right.
So what are they hoping for? I mean, it's outrageous.
Yeah. I don't ever hope that a medicine works. Either it does I guess we do, like with cancer treatment and stuff. You hope that things work. But
trial,
I don't hope that a specific type of medicine, like you're hoping on behalf of the pharmaceuticals only. That's how this reads to me.
Where was it where the lady chuckled? From the CDC or whatever, where she chuckled when she was asked if it does.
That was in the European Parliament. And I believe it was a politician from the Netherlands who asked, was it tested for transmission? And she was like, no, because we were working at the speed of science.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it didn't. Yeah. She admitted. Right. It was from their, it was from their European offices.
Yeah. So anyhow, someone, when I said that I tend to start stuff like... with people that we have to live with in our community. And someone said, that's a woman thing to do. I mean, mostly it's this kind of ideological stuff when it's like live and let live. You have to live in the community with these people. Don't start something. But I don't like it. So, I'm going to try and not embarrass my whole family.
To excommunicated from your Facebook groups, but from your community, that's a little different.
It's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your neighbors.
So,
like, are you, yeah, we're going to see you at the fall flu shot clinic this weekend, kids. we're busy this weekend.
Absolutely not, you sheep.
Sorry, like, Dr.
Mommy,
Johnson.
Please don't. No, you guys know what this is like. My mom used to, if she got bad service or something, she'd be like, can I see your manager? And my sister and I would be like, boom. I'm like, let's just get out of here. So I'm trying to not do that. And, you know, what does it matter? Like, if you're an idiot and you want to find, here's another thing that bothers me, though. They're saying, let's figure out who's eligible, and then we can come up with some diagnosis to declare your child high risk so that they can get it if you want. Well, what are the implications of that? So let's say your child is healthy, but let's say that, let's make up that they have some asthma or whatever. Those are the things that will follow them throughout their whole lives. It could affect their future insurance premiums. It could, you're going to give them a pre-existing condition so that they can be eligible for the, that's what they're saying they're willing to do.
Right.
Is, I mean, put a false, like, diagnosis
your, I mean, your
on your kid.
Think about the interview we just had earlier. Well, I did an interview today. It's going to come out on Friday, and it's unbelievable, about America's tainted blood supply. I mean, think about the people that are getting this mRNA vaccine, and they're getting, like, turning out with Bell's palsy. Like, so we're going to force this on a child so that they may wind up with, like, Bell's palsy.
Well, no, I mean, not even the
thing?
Effect of the vaccine. I'm talking about the what they're saying here is, if they don't have a pre-existing condition, we're willing to put it in their files so that they can get the COVID vaccine. That's what I read between the lines, like, as them saying.
That's like,
right?
You know, we know your kid really wants chemo, so we're going to figure out a way to make it look like they have cancer.
That's exactly, yeah.
Right.
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 Yeah.
You don't have cancer, but
it's like,
we're going to figure out a way. We'll massage it enough so you can get this thing. It's demonic. It absolutely is demonic. These people are just like satanic individuals. I just cannot wrap my head around it. It really makes me sick to my stomach. I feel like we are living in a simulation right now, run by demons.
Really pissed.
I'm going to take some of your super chats here in a second. We're going to get to some of that. So get them in. Yeah, like someone's like, yeah, face paralysis is great. Let's look at the, it's unbelievable. Yeah, and the fact that, like, the, I don't understand. At the heart of it is still Robert Kennedy. Like, he rolled back a lot of these things, and then, but we still have these, like, recommendations for 5-plus-year-olds and at-risk individuals. Like, don't you know? You know the data. You know all of it now. You're going after Fauci. You've written a whole book on this stuff. Why are we even still have this thing on the shelf at this point? It is satanic.
It's culture. They've like established a culture, and it's so it's like, I see that email as almost like a form of virtue signaling. You know, it's like I think about like that New Zealand couple that their kid needed a blood transfusion, in like during COVID, and then they set up a donor, found their own donor, and the government just like flat out refused to let them do that because culture. There was no medical reason not to do it. If you need a transfusion, you have a donor, there's no reason not to do it. And it's the same thing. Yeah. Like they're looking at it going, well, we're in this culture of we promote this vaccine. So that's what that email is. It's like, hey, look, we're still a part of that culture.
Yeah.
Even though there's no,
they
there's
could
no
say nothing
basis.
Or they could say the data now shows that healthy kids don't need it. But that would be an admission that the data has shown that all along. They could do nothing. But instead, they're sending it to everybody.
Here, so. Simply Jaded says, docs get payout for pushing the vax. Yeah, that's what I just asked Dr. Corey about. So, and because he wouldn't do it, he got canned. You know, he got pushed out. So I'd love to know from this pediatrician, like, how much do you get paid per COVID shot?
Yeah.
Like, how much does your practice get from the pharmaceutical industry to push this on children? I'd love to know that. But I guess we can't reply to that email?
No.
Because I would love to. Like, I know you stir up a lot of shit, but this is the kind of stuff that makes me furious. And I would.
Oh, you want to be the shit starter this time?
By
all
will.
Means.
I will. And I'll do it in such a, manly, like.
The way Clayton starts shit, though, is, I'm sorry, I keep saying that word, is passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you want kids to get hurt. You're willing to skirt the rules. You're willing to commit insurance fraud. That's interesting.
Yeah, I just can't handle it. Yeah. Just curious. Why are you? Yeah. How much money do you guys make for the pharmaceutical industry?
Why you want to do insurance fraud? That's interesting.
Someone says $125 per shot. I think it's even probably. Yeah. Is it that price? Anyway, we'll find out. We're going to get your super chats here and your chats here in a second. But first. Yes. Do you know that microplastics are everywhere? They're all in our food, everywhere. In fact, we're being exposed to all sorts of problems, from the food we eat to the air we breathe, mRNA technology injected into food supplies, credit, like basically microplastics inside of a credit card we're eating every year in our body. It's unbelievable. That's why we take Kimchi One from our friends at Brightcore Nutrition. Each capsule is packed with over 900 strains of probiotics, live enzymes, antioxidants to flush out the toxins, rebuild your gut balance, fortify your immune system against the daily assault. A strong gut means better resistance, more energy, sharper focus, smoother digestion, stronger protection from the inside out. Kimchi One is all natural, non-GMO, it's dairy-free, gluten-free, 100% made in the United States by a company that truly cares about your health and your freedom. I take it every day as part of my supplements. I love Kimchi One. It's fantastic. So if maybe you don't like the taste of regular kimchi, you know, which is, fermented cabbage and all that. Maybe you don't like the taste of it. Well, that's why Kimchi One, the pill, is so great, because you don't have to get any of that taste and you get all the benefits. You can try it today and get 20% off your order by using the code redacted. Just go to mybrightcore.com/redacted. Many of you, I see your comments in the chat saying you've ordered this, you love it. I'm telling you, I use it every day. I wouldn't go a day without it. The best deal, though, that's 25%, just going to their website. You get 50% off if you call them, and free shipping. So, you know, just don't be a wimp. Just get on the phone and call them, like we used to do back in the 1990s and 1980s. You get on the phone, talk to people, and you'll get 50% off and free shipping. 888-404-6312. Get up to 50% off, free shipping. And you'll even get a free bottle. They're doing this now. A free bottle of vitamin D3 with your order if you get on the phone and call them. So, again, makes more sense to get on the phone and call them. Let's be honest. 888-404-6312. Detox your body. Rebuild your gut. Take your health into your own hands starting today. All right, some super chats here. Let's see.
Oh, it says, Natalie, great speech at Ron Paul's birthday. Has it gone up live, or were you there? Thank you very much. I didn't know if it was live yet.
You know what's so
I'll
funny?
Have to
people
check for myself.
So Natalie, by the way, I know it's a little. So Natalie is spelled without an E at the end of it. You know that? I know that.
Well, you didn't have to.
I'm just saying. Your mom purposely made it difficult when she named you. She took away the E.
Yeah, so she did that.
Everyone misspells her name. Always. But there's no E at the end of it.
Thank you so
even
much.
Even when I'm driving. When I'm driving and a group text comes in and it was from Natalie, and my Siri in my car will be like, Natalie said.
Natalie Morris.
Natalie.
Said, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You can actually change that, but I still haven't figured out how.
My name or the pronunciation?
I'm still trying. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to change your name.
Okay.
Seeing if Siri can help me with that. Okay. Here's Akita Hart says, remember, Trump is a boomer. Boomers were raised to believe that pills and pokes are made to help, not for profit. They've been programmed their whole lives. YouTube won't let me post this, by the way. Well, I don't know. Did you post that on Rumble, maybe? I guess you posted
that
on
Rumble.
So thank you for that. Hey, you. Thank you for your $5 super chat. Says, the truth is available to people. Most don't want to know it or face it because that means they may have to take responsibility and change. Isn't that the truth? How many people do you guys know in your lives that like just refuse? They just cannot listen to certain things. Like, nope. They can watch certain things, but when it comes to like really difficult subjects, whether it's like child trafficking or, you know, like they block it out. Yeah. They cannot
talk
about
it. At a family barbecue this weekend, I tried to ring some. I was like, I'm going to wring your neck because someone was saying that Ryan, what's his face, is a good guy. I'm like, he literally forced his.
Deadpool?
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds?
Ryan Reynolds is a good guy. I'm like, you need to look at this stuff. And they're like, I refuse. I want to like Deadpool. I'm not going to look into that. Why? So this is why I have no friends.
Yeah, exactly.
And yes, you can call me Nat in the chat. It's easier. I answer to that.
Yes, a lot of people.
Yeah,
Leah
a lot of
Hunt
people
says
are like
a
that.
Lot of people. Exactly, Leah. YouTube promoted the clot shots. I think they did. Yeah. I mean, well, they were certainly.
Well, definitely.
They certainly blocked anybody who challenged it.
Yeah.
It was a concerted effort. We know that.
Yeah.
And let's see. Demons, you say. Thank you for your $6.99 Canadian. Says demons, you say, in DC, in pharmacy? Book, read The Return of the Gods by Jonathan Kahn. I will write this down. Return of the Gods.
Okay.
Return of the Gods by... There's a lot of books, by the way, that you guys recommend that we end up reading. So don't think that we just ignore that. You'd see like our library, when you guys mention books, we end up reading them. So we take these things seriously. And by the way, a lot of them are, I'll put this back up if anyone else wants to check that book out. Can't put it up. There it goes. There you go. Yeah. By Jonathan Kahn. A lot of the books that you recommend are like out of print or hard to find because there's a reason they don't want you to see them, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
So
there's right. A lot of books that I won't even bring to the airport and read in public. Thank goodness for Kindle.
I know I had a whole book on Nazis the other day. I'm like, I can't read this at the airport.
Yeah. What was the one that Simon told us, the Holocaust industry? I'm like, I can't bring that on a plane. Yeah. Like, so
some Zionists will get really pissed about it.
I remember like when I was 18 or 19, I had to go through some back channels and I got myself a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook, which is one of those you're not supposed to have. I don't have it anymore in case anybody's listening.
Okay. Yeah. Let's make that clear.
I always read tales of people that had the Anarchist Cookbook back in the day. Could you find it at your local library? Like what did it mean? You could make like pipe bombs or something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
Golden Prospector Milo says main casualty of Rona was a scientific method. FYI, Clayton Gold at an all-time high. Is it? Did it just hit another all-time high? Holy smokes. Well, silver, you saw silver this week. My God, did you see? Gold, let's see, gold prices. Are you texting me?
No.
Tell me something. Oh, okay. Sometimes she texts me during the show or like when she wants to go do something. If we're like... gold had just hit a record high at $3,599 an ounce. Where's silver price? Silver price. Yeah. Wow. $41.73. That's crazy. Again, it's the first time in 14 years that we've seen silver. And the last time that this happened where silver hit this number, it's went over $50. An ounce for silver. So it hits 40 and then it goes up to 50. Each time that happened in the last 14 years, the last time that happened, it went over $50. So again, get ready, folks. They know what's coming. Central banks buying up as much gold as they can and silver surging. Can't get through without hearing Zionist a few. Can't get through Redacted without hearing Zionist a few times. Liberty.
I don't think we even said anything about.
Oh, I just mentioned. I said
about a book.
About a book. Someone would get upset if you were reading the Holocaust industry book at the.
Is that what it's called?
And I said, yeah, I'm sure a Zionist would come up and yell at you about that. So that I did mention it, but most of the show today we didn't really talk about.
And in fact, the author of the Holocaust industry is a descendant of Holocaust victims. His name's Norman Finkelstein, and it is in fact called The Holocaust Industry: Reflections on the Exploitation of Jewish Suffering. I have it in hard copy because I don't want Kindle to delete it. And I'm not bringing that to the airport.
Yeah, you need physical media these days. Physical media is so important, they'll just go into your library and delete books out of your digital library. Or they'll rewrite them. You know, they might even need to delete them. They go in and actually edit them. Like, what? That's not the book I bought.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. What were you going to say? Was that David?
I said Lace is out.
Yeah.
Little footballs. All right. I think that's gold and silver just getting started. Exactly. Someone said, I like, thank you, Lynn. Lynn's Wins says, I like the horse picture there. Says, and she's a member. I think of the, so grateful for sponsor funded journalism. So keep those ads coming. We all need you. Thank you. And by the way, the sponsors that we have on the show have no say in what we do on the show. If anyone ever told me what to say on this show, I'd give them the middle finger and tell them to F off. But our sponsors are fantastic and they support independent journalism. And we have the four or five that we have in a show. They're very, very important to us. You want to tell them about the newsletter before we go?
Sure. There was no newsletter today because we traveled yesterday, but the Redacted newsletter is usually out and it's free every day that the show is live. Now, remember, this was a holiday week. Next week, we go back to 4 days a week and the newsletter all along has been 4 days a week for throughout the whole summer. So you can get it at redacted.inc. You put in your email address. There is no upsell. There is no cross sell. It's totally free. It comes as a companion to this show so that you have links to original source material, which is important to us, so that you can think and read for yourself. And again, go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and get the newsletter for free. We will see you here tomorrow. We will see you here Thursday. And then we will see you here next Monday. We're back to our weekly schedule. So thank you for abiding our summer abbreviated schedule.
I just want to mention, we launched our new website. We did like a soft launch for our new redacted.inc. It's not .com, a website. We launched it a few weeks ago. We did like a soft launch. But I do want to test it. I want to stress test it. So if all of you want to like go over and just check it out, you can see, you can just hang out on the website for a few minutes just to see if we can crash it. I would love to see if we can crash the website. So there's tens of thousands of you watching across all of our platforms right now. Just go over to the website, redacted.inc. And if you haven't signed up for the newsletter, click that. See if you can do that. But try to like just go around the website a little bit and just navigate it and see what we have there and see if you can crash the website. My team doesn't know I'm about to do this, but let's see if we can crash it. All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Thank you for watching us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great night, everyone.